This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
It's Anti-War Radio here on KPFK. It's 90.7 in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, and 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake. I'm Scott Horton. I'm here every Friday from 6:30 to 7 o'clock for Anti-War Radio. And Ray McGovern was on yesterday to talk about what we might not hear due to the fact that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Ramzi Ben al-Shib, and the others accused in the 9/11 terrorist attacks will not be getting a trial in New York, Illinois, or anywhere else, but will be getting a military commission down at Guantanamo Bay. And it was such a good interview, I thought we'd reprise it for you here tonight on Anti-War Radio on KPFK. Welcome to the show, Ray. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you joining us this evening. I know it's especially late over there on the East Coast.
Well, that's okay. I'm still awake.
All right. Well, most of you in the KPFK audience are probably familiar with Ray McGovern. He's a former analyst with the CIA there for 27 years, including did the morning briefings for Vice President Bush in the 1980s. He's a co-founder of the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and is a member of Veterans for Peace. He writes at Robert Perry's great website, consortiumnews.com, and we're running his latest article from consortiumnews.com right now at antiwar.com. It's called Military Tribunals May Keep 9/11 Motives Hidden. And Ray, your article pretty much begins with the story of Helen Thomas and a question unanswered. Why don't you pick it up there?
Well, Scott, it's kind of a sad story about the stenographers who passed for the White House press corps, but they never asked really, really good questions, except for Helen Thomas, who, of course, is no longer there. After the underpants bomber over Detroit, Abdel-Muttalib, after he was apprehended, and the president gave a kind of interesting press conference there in early January of 2010, he turned the proceedings over to his guru on counterterrorism, John Brennan, and he said, John will answer any of your questions. And he got some, you know, the usual anodyne questions about security measures at airports and so forth. And then Helen Thomas said, well, yeah, you know, what you never tell us, John, is why do they want to do us harm? What's their motivation? We never hear about that. It was very, very painful. I know Brennan, you know, and he just, you know, he didn't expect to be asked a real question. So he said, well, Al-Qaeda is an organization that's dedicated to murder and wanton slaughter of innocents. They pervert religion. And Helen Thomas says, oh, so it's about religion. Well, no, they're perverting religion in a corrupt way. And Helen says, well, but why? Brennan, Al-Qaeda is just determined to carry out attacks here against the homeland. Helen Thomas, but you still haven't explained why. Well, you know, there are explanations as to why, but we never hear them in what I call the fawning corporate media.
Well, and John Brennan must know what they are. He's the head of counterterrorism, right? It's not like he's the head of the House Intelligence Committee, like, you know, I would expect somebody like Sylvester Reyes. I guess he's the minority leader now, but I know he doesn't know Hezbollah from Al-Qaeda, but this guy works in the White House.
Yeah, he knows, but it's politically incorrect to say these reasons. So what we have to do is go back to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed himself, the so-called mastermind of 9/11, and see what he said about why he did it. Now, when he was asked during the preparation of the 9/11 Commission report why he did it, he told them, I'll quote it, the page 147, you could look it up in your 9/11 Commission report, quote, by his own account, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's animus toward the United States stemmed not from his experience there as a student, but rather from his violent disagreement with U.S. foreign policy favoring Israel. Wow. Now, that's politically incorrect to say that, but that's what he said. Now, the Washington Post, under the influence of the neocons that like to start wars and like to disguise the motivation for wars, they cleaned up that account. They waited a decent interval, 5 years, okay? And then they gave this account, and I'll quote it. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's limited and negative experience in the United States, which included a brief jail stay because of unpaid bills, almost certainly helped propel him on his path to becoming a terrorist. He stated that his contact with Americans, while minimal, confirmed his view that the United States was a debauched and racist country, period, end quote. Whoa, here we go, you know. It wasn't at all because of Israel. Nothing said here about Israel, but rather because of unpaid bills and, you know, overnight in jail. Give me a break. I suppose we could give the Post the benefit of the doubt. It probably was on the 183rd waterboarding session that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed thought to say this. I kid, of course. That's one of the real reasons, and it's disguised because it's not politically convenient to say it. The others, of course, are our occupation the occupation of Iraq when we went in there, and Afghanistan, propping up the dictators that have little regard for human rights in that area. And, of course, in the background is always OIL, oil. So these reasons are kept from the American people, even though the accused himself has said chapter and verse. You know, Scott, very, very seldom do we get a government institution commenting on this. But curiously enough, there was a report from the Defense Science Board. It's really quite interesting. This is what they said after analyzing why the terrorists do these things. Quote, America's policy choices have consequences. Right or wrong, it's simply a fact that American policy regarding the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and American actions in Iraq are dominant staples of popular commentary across the Arab and Muslim world. Actually, that's a quote from the 9/11 Commission itself. And before it, there was a Defense Science Board, which very unusually said this, quote, taking issue exactly with what Bush and Cheney were saying, quote, Muslims do not hate our freedom. They hate our policies. The overwhelming majority voice of their objections, voice their objections to what they see as one-sided support in favor of Israel and against Palestinian rights, and the long-standing, even increasing support for what Muslims collectively see as tyrannies, most notably Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Pakistan, and the Gulf states, end quote. Now, that's particularly prescient given what's happened in many of those countries, and others could have been mentioned, over the last couple of months. So, why do they hate us? It isn't because of our democracy or our freedoms. They hate us because of our policies, and if we don't own up to that, if we don't explain that to the American people, the policies will continue, and they'll hate us more, and they'll do us more harm.
All right, it's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Ray McGovern. He's a former CIA analyst, and he now writes for ConsortiumNews.com. And, you know, what you say makes lots of sense, that, you know, occupying Iraq, occupying Afghanistan, this kind of thing causes terrorism against us. But the thing about that is that, well, hey, they started it on September 11th, and so, yeah, we got to go fight a war on terrorism, and there might be some blowback for that, but what are you going to do? We're on the defensive here, right? Those planes came out of the clear blue sky that day, the day history began.
Well, Scott, I know that you're being facetious there. Just looking at the list of indignities and violence that you listed at the entrance to this program, the violence going on in all those countries you mentioned, you know, that's one of the legacies of all this. There's more violence, there's more terrorism, and there will continue to be more so long as the U.S. doesn't change the misguided policies inspired not only by its lust for oil, not only by its lust for permanent military bases. You know, we have Karzai himself in Afghanistan owning up to the fact that we've been demanding military bases there. Not only those things, but our misguided support for what we consider to be Israel's policies in those areas, and specifically in Gaza. You mentioned what happened in Gaza this week. You know, what really is destructive of any sense of a policy is the fact that as soon as the Israelis conduct what are unconscionable attacks, for example, on Gaza, as they did a couple of years ago, immediately we have Congress come in. The Goldstone Report, that was in the news, you mentioned that, I think. The Goldstone Report said that there was an unconscionable display of attacks on civilians. The casualties were 100 to 1, okay, 100 to 1, 1,400 Palestinians killed against 14 Israelis. And what happened? The House of Representatives, our House of Representatives, voted 344-36 to denounce the findings of the Goldstone Report. Goldstone being a widely acclaimed jurist, he's a Jew himself from South Africa. So what the Israelis look on in this country is the fact that they can always expect, no matter how egregious their activity, how egregious their behavior, they can always expect that kind of lopsided vote in Congress, and so the policy will not change unless we get a president and a secretary of state who has some backbone and says, no, you know, not only is it unjust what we're doing, but it's counterproductive because there's going to be more and more violence. Just look at the list of violences that you mentioned at the entrance to this program.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if we really do have our cart and our horse in the proper order here, and the problem really is our occupations and support for dictatorships and so forth in the region, then it seems like this week has been, or the last couple of weeks especially, have been really bad for that. As you mentioned Hamid Karzai there. Well, Michel Flournoy in Doug Feith's chair at the Deputy Secretary of Defense for Policy announced that no matter what we come to in negotiations with the Taliban, we're still keeping permanent bases in Afghanistan forever. And, of course, Robert Gates announced yesterday that they're doing everything they can to try to convince Maliki to sign a letter to Obama asking him to please stay beyond the 2011 deadline in Iraq. And then now we got a brand new war in Libya that certainly we can't withdraw from until we're done with purple-fingered elections and training up an army so that they can stand up and we can stand down 10, 15 years from now. What do you think?
Well, you know, there's that old Code Pink banner that said, who lies, who dies, and who profits. There are a ton of corporations making a whole lot of money on all this stuff, the so-called military-industrial complex. And their influence on Obama and the whole government is something that I've never seen so strong. The notion that we need to stay in Afghanistan permanently in Iraq, those were things that a lot of us, you and I included, pointed out years ago. And we laughed at, oh, no, we're out there to catch the terrorists. Well, it should be apparent to the American people that's not why we're there. We're there to dominate that part of the world. Most people don't realize that right above, just to the northwest of Afghanistan, a country called Turkmenistan, used to be part of the Soviet Union, that country has natural gas deposits that are worth more than all the oil in Iraq. Okay, I'll say that again. Natural gas in Turkmenistan worth more than all the oil in Iraq. So what does that mean? Well, there's a pipeline that needs to go from Turkmenistan to Afghanistan to Pakistan, a little slice of India, and wow, it's out in a warm water port. Doesn't have to go through Soviet Union. I'm sorry, doesn't have to go through Russia. Doesn't have to go through the Strait of Hormuz. Man, what? You know who's going to be the running the terminal there at the end? This was envisaged 10 years ago, a corporation called Enron. Okay, now that pipeline is still on the drawing board. When I asked Khalid Zad, the former ambassador, our former ambassador to both Afghanistan and then Iraq, I said, well, where's the pipeline stand? This was an open meeting with Rand. I said, well, we can't build the pipeline as long as there's so much violence.
Yeah, well, you know what I think? I think nobody else can build a pipeline either as long as there's so much violence there.
And
any oil company's got to realize that.
Is that where we're there?
Yeah, I mean, anybody's got to realize that the security situation doesn't really exist to build, to invest in a big pipeline across there. But if they can keep the security situation this much tumult, then that means that, you know, whoever has plans to make the pipeline go this way instead of that way will be unable to do it their way either. So maybe we can just settle for that, you know?
Well, meanwhile, back at the ranch, the Chinese are exploiting all manner of natural resources in Afghanistan as we do the fighting. The Chinese are profiting from all this, and in the end, it will turn out that they will emerge as the dominant figure, and even the Russians are concerned about that, because this is the key area. This is where all the natural gas, not all, but almost all the natural gas and the oil that's easily extracted is located. So it's the old problem, you know. Oil, it drives everything. We need a presence there. We need permanent military bases there. If not to control the oil itself, to at least to prevent others from controlling it. And unless we get out of that syndrome, there's going to be more and more terrorism. We're not going to have enough troops, even given the poverty draft here in this country. We're not going to have enough troops to put in all these places to pursue what we consider to be our needs.
Well, and the whole thing is so corrupt, too, because, you know, we must spend, I don't know, 10 times as much money, quote-unquote, securing these resources than we actually spend on the resources, oil and natural gas and whatever from the old world. It's not an economic decision for America in general, just for the connected companies who are, you know, sucking out of our pockets as the money goes out, really.
Sure. Well, we'll take Halliburton, for example. Now, the CEO of Halliburton used to be a fellow named Cheney, okay? Now, in 1999, when he was CEO of Halliburton, he complained. He said, you know, people are criticizing us because the supply of oil is dwindling and we haven't opened up any new sources of supply. They have to realize that a lot of that oil is controlled by countries that are hostile to us. And so we have to figure out ways to deal with that. Well, they did figure out a way to do that. That's called the invasion of Iraq, and to a lesser extent, but a real extent, the invasion of Afghanistan. And so, you know, unless we come to our senses, you know, sometimes I learn a lot of good things from my grandchildren, Scott, and little four-year-old Ronan in Oakland was in nursery school, and I was there helping that day, and I asked the teacher if there was always a, now, what do you try to teach these four-year-old kids? I mean, and she took me over to a bench and she said, look, see, there are 8 toys here. We put 12 kids around the table and we teach them how to share. That's what we try. If we could succeed in that with these four-year-olds, they're off to a good start. You need to know how to share. Now, obviously, Bush and Cheney didn't go to that nursery school, but the sooner Americans learned that no longer can we pursue our post-World War II policy of garnering a half of the 50% of the natural resources of this country, I mean, of this world, with only, well, it used to be 6% of the people, now it's about 4% of the people, ain't going to work anymore. What we need to do is sit around a table with the Chinese, with the Indians, who both need these resources desperately, and the Russians, and the Iranians, and the Pakistanis, and work it out. Work it out. Share it. And if that doesn't happen, then we'll have not only 3 resource wars going on, we'll have 4 or 5, and it'll never stop in the 21st century.
Well, you know, if the Chinese and the Saudis want to put an end to it, all they have to do is stop buying our securities. And that's the end of the empire right then and there.
Yeah, it's...
No negotiations required. I mean, really, all they got to do is dump the dollar and that's it. We're cooked.
Yeah. I guess economically that has pluses and minuses for them, but we certainly are vulnerable, and you're right to point that out.
Yeah. All right, now it's Ray McGovern. He's from the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity and ConsortiumNews.com. He was a CIA analyst for 27 years. And I wanted to get back to the question of American support for Israel as motivation for terrorism against us. Obviously, the American empire is committing all kinds of crimes against all kinds of people all across the Middle East. But it does seem that the Al-Qaeda movement, and especially before the September 11th attack, really did hone in on the Israel issue as a reason to attack the United States. And, you know, there are a few examples of that. We don't have too much time left, maybe 5-6 minutes here, Ray. But I was hoping you could explain, you know, why it would be that terrorists dating back to Ramzi Youssef in 1993 when he attempted to knock over one World Trade Center tower in New York into the other one, which could have killed at least tens of thousands if that had been pulled off right at the very beginning of the Clinton administration. Well, why do they all cite American support for Israel? What's so bad about it?
Well,
Or what's so right about it that these evil people just can't stand it?
Well, the short answer is everything, but the more important thing is that in the phoning corporate media, you'll never hear what these people say. You know, here's Ramzi Youssef, okay? After he tried to knock down that one twin tower on February 26, 1993, he fled. And he wrote a letter to the New York Times. And this is what he said. We declare our responsibility for the explosion of the mentioned building. This action was done in response for American political, economical, and military support to Israel, a state of terrorism, and to the rest of the dictator countries in the region. Then they caught him, okay? They tried him. They sentenced him to 140 years in a federal penitentiary. You know what he said? He said, I'm happy. I'm happy to be convicted and going to prison because this way I was able to show how much hatred we have for the effects of U.S. policy favoring Israel. Now, when I mentioned these kinds of things before Congress way back in 2005, immediately the congressmen, and these were Democratic representatives, they started sweating. You could see it. And I looked and I said, well, I realize I'm saying something not quite politically correct, but you got to face up to this. This is part of it. And you know what they did? Three hours later, they put out a press release that I was anti-Semitic. Now,
yeah,
you know,
of course.
All I said was that part of the motivation here is that the U.S. and Israel are very determined to keep dominating that part of the world. Now, if that's not as clear as the nose on your face, nothing is. And for that, I get called anti-Semitic. And that, I suppose, is one reason why many correspondents and so-called journalists just avoid this issue like the plague, and it needs to be addressed. And it needs to be addressed now. And what we have with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed being sent to a military commission rather than a federal criminal trial is the ability of the government to suppress all this, to cherry-pick the correspondents they let attend, to make sure they stamp secret everything that goes there and disguise this from the American people. And that's one major motivation why Congress tied the government's hands here, made Obama do this. Obama needs some backbone himself. He could have forced this through, but that would have been politically correct, and it would have hurt him politically. So we have politics reigning here in this respect, and the sooner the American people know what's going on, the better, not only for the United States, but for Israel in the medium and long term, because they can't persist in the kind of policies that they're conducting right now.
Yeah, I mean, really, if we have premise number one of this entire war wrong, which is, you know, intervention is the solution to terrorism instead of its cause, then we're in for a really long, bloody haul here, Ray. And, you know, here we are almost a decade later, a decade into this terror war, and we still don't have this argument straight. It still carries the day that Islamic extremism makes people hate good things and want to destroy those good things. That is still the dominant narrative for how we got into this mess in the American media. And I really appreciate you doing what you can to confront it the way you do, because things are really not going well based on having this argument wrong. They talked for 2-3 weeks about whether to invade Libya or not, and there were almost no voices saying, hey, this is another Sunni Arab, Arab Sunni Muslim country in the very same region. This is going to look really bad for that whole trying to not provoke more terrorism effort here. And hardly anyone was even talking about that. It didn't even occur to them. This is just a humanitarian exercise, as though it's completely divorced from the rest of these policies. And I wonder how bad it's going to be the next time there is another major terrorist attack in America, another red alert. Then what are we going to do? Then who are we going to nuke?
Yeah, it's a very myopic policy, and worse still, and the thing that bothers me mostly about Libya is that it's unconstitutional. Clear as the nose on your face, the president moved to get us into a war without consulting Congress, as the first article of the Constitution requires. You know, he's supposed to be a professor of constitutional law. I have a brother who's a lawyer, and he asked me, Ray, I wonder, the Constitution of what country did he teach?
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't the Constitution.
Well, maybe it's the Constitution of Israel. Oh, they don't have one. Right. Okay. All right. Well, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for your time, Ray. I really appreciate it.
Most welcome, Scott. that.
All right, everybody. That is the great Ray McGovern from Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. He also writes for the great Robert Perry's website, consortiumnews.com. His latest piece there and at antiwar.com is Military Tribunals May Keep 9/11 Motives Hidden. And that's it for Anti-War Radio today. I'd like to mention my my blog is thestressblog.com. And if you want to find the archives of all my interviews, I've topped 1,800 interviews this week. They're all available at scotthortonshow.com, and the vast majority of them also at antiwar.com/radio. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back here next Friday, 6:30 to 7, KPFK in L.A.